Good morning, Oregon, and thank you once again for loading me down and queuing me up. I'm Finn J.D. John, bringing you another daily episode of the Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Every weekday, this podcast brings you another story from the archives of the Offbeat Oregon History syndicated newspaper column. Full details will be found at offbeatoregon.com. Do check that out. But first, sit back and relax and let me tell you the story, at least the overview of the story, of Portland as the Shanghai capital of the world, as it was in the 1890s and early 1900s. So the days when Portland was a rough, tough, hard-drinking, hard-punching dockside town, and the city's crimping activity actually generated some international incidents with foreign governments. By the way, this is pretty much the first thing I have ever written about the Shanghai scene in Portland. Covering that subject in any way is full of little bombs here and there in the form of waterfront folklore being presented as fact, and there are several pieces of that in here. I've identified them as folklore. They may be factual. They may also be entirely made up. Most likely they're somewhere in the middle. They're based on a true story, like a Lifetime television presentation. And so keep in mind as I'm talking about rumors and Shanghaiing stories and things like that, people didn't keep records of stuff like that. We know there was a lot of it going on, but most of the details we kind of have to turn to the waterfront folklore to get. Here we go. You'd never know it from looking around the Pearl District of Portland today, but a little over 100 years ago, this was the most dangerous place on the West Coast to go out drinking. The risk you ran wasn't so much death or injury, though. It was the risk of waking up the next morning on board a bark headed for China with an angry first mate screaming at you to get up and get to work, and probably kicking you in the ribs, too. Not many people know it, but at the end of the 1800s, Portland was the most notorious city in the Western Hemisphere for the practice known as crimping, after a Dutch word for holding pen for fish, like the lobster tank at the restaurant, you know. Crimping involved opening a boarding house and extending credit to sailors and unemployed loggers and hobos and pretty much anybody who would come, letting them run up the tab until they couldn't pay, except by going to sea as a deckhand on a sailing ship. Soon the time would come when they would have to either pay up or go to sea, and they would all have to go to sea, and the crimp or boarding house owner would get paid out of an advance against the new sailor's pay. When a ship needed a man or two and there wasn't one in the boarding house, sometimes crimping involved the practice still known today as shanghaiing, going out with a bottle of whiskey and some knockout drops to find one. Quote, I will state that there is one port on the Pacific coast that has always been known as the greatest crimping den in America, Andrew Furuseth, president of the International Seamen's Union of America, testified to the U.S. House of Representatives in 1911. I refer to the port of Portland. It got so bad that the French embassy actually filed a formal complaint in 1901, saying French sailors were regularly being crimped there. In Astoria, the scene was similar, but because Astoria wasn't the second largest city on the West Coast, it wasn't as widely noticed. Crimpers operated in several ways in the 1890s Portland and Astoria. Most ran boarding houses at which rent was on credit, and when a captain needed a few able-bodied sailors, ABs they called them, the crimp would simply clear the house out, collecting a fee of $30 to $100 a head from the captain, and often delivering the men unconscious, sometimes wrapped in a canvas tarp. If there weren't enough sailors and laid-off loggers living in the boarding house, the crimp might, as I said, try prowling the downtown watering holes, chatting customers up and slipping knockout drops in their drinks. In other words, shanghaiing, which pretty much all the crimps engaged in, but none would ever admit to. Crimps drummed up extra business by coaxing sailors to desert while they were in port. Sometimes, when the cargo was unloaded and it was time to set sail, captains found themselves buying their old crew back. Portland's notoriety reached a peak in the mid-1890s. There's an enduring waterfront story from that time about a particular colorfully named character named Joseph Bunko Kelly, who reportedly delivered 24 dead men to the captain of a British merchant ship. Kelly himself vigorously denied the story, and I haven't been able to find any corroborating evidence, so the tale must be taken with a sizable grain of salt. The story is that Kelly, on the prowl for ABs, came across an open cellar door and found inside several dozen dead and dying men. They had broken into the cellar of what they thought was a saloon, but it was actually the mortuary next door to it, and the booze they'd been guzzling was embalming fluid, deadly poison. Well, Kelly wrapped them up and hauled them down to the waterfront and cashed them in, so the story goes. One imagines the ship's captain being less than pleased the next day. You might think hauling 24 bodies out of a cellar and down to the waterfront would be an activity that would attract some official attention. Not in 1890s Portland. In fact, when Portland Chief of Police Samuel Parrish quit in 1892, there was a persistent rumor that he'd been asked to leave because he'd been discreetly shanghaiing drunks out of the city lockup and had accidentally shipped out someone important. And the top Portland crimper, a hard-punching scoundrel named Larry Sullivan, once boasted, "I am the law in Portland." The sailors themselves didn't have much of a say in all this. No one seems to have given much thought to whether this crimping and shanghaiing was an okay way to treat them. In fact, in 1897, the U.S. Supreme Court actually ruled that the 13th Amendment effectively didn't apply to sailors when it declared involuntary servitude unconstitutional, ruling in essence that merchant sailors were not fit to be entrusted with the full rights of citizens. Fact is, the end of the crimping era would come not from the law, but from commerce. Labor-intensive barks and barkentines and schooners were giving way to the more lightly staffed steamships, and it was no longer necessary to shark up a big list of ABs. By the early 1900s, crimping, while still practiced, was a dying art, and by 1915, when the federal government finally did something about it, passing the Relatively Toothless Seamen's Act, the practice was mostly history anyway. Well, that's it for today. And if you are listening for the first time and want some more information about Offbeat Oregon history, you can get everything at our central website at offbeatoregon.com. The complete catalog of about 205 columns going back to 2008, plus links out to audio and text feeds and Facebook page and Twitter feed. The website's also where you'll find full citations for sources of this story, which include works by Dick Pinterich, Nicholas Sterin, portlandwaterfront.org, the U.S. Bureau of Navigation, the U.S. House of Representatives, and the Oregon Encyclopedia. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band, atlasstringband.com, written by Carmen Ficarra. This podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details of that, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Coming to Corvallis? Drop me a line. Let's grab a cup of coffee and talk history. I'm at finn@offbeatoregon.com. I promise I won't put any knockout drinks in your coffee, by the way. That's it for today. In coming attractions, tomorrow is Thursday. Thursday is our Stories, Legends, and Lies of Oregon Day. I'm going to be reading you a chapter or possibly two from Stuart Holbrook's book, Holy Old Mackinaw, about the early days of logging in Oregon, the Misery Whip era, railroad logging, bull team logging, that kind of stuff. Look for that after about 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. And in the meantime, go fill up the rest of the day with good stuff. Bye now.